Welcome to WFPL's Jefferson County Board of Education District 4 debate. I'm your moderator, Devin Kadayama. I just want to first start by having the candidates introduce themselves. This is also an audience member question. You can just tell us a little bit about yourself. Have you ever run for public office before? If so, which office, when? Why have you chosen to run for school board at this time? And we can start at this end, at the end.
Hello, I'm Eric Bullock, and I ran for Metro City Council in District 414, which is in District 4 for for the Jefferson County Public School Board. And I grew up in Jefferson County, worked and lived in Jefferson County all of my life. And I have one son, has graduated from Butler High School, is now a freshman in the University of Louisville. He's going through there with the partnered with the UPS and the Work to Study program, which is a really good program. I graduated from Eastern High School, and I decided to run for the school board because not just because the seat was open, but I think that I can offer some new, fresh ideas to the school board and to the community at large, as it is with the school. And as the night goes on, I'll explain the ideas that I have, and from talking to the parents and being a parent of a school and of a school of a child that was in Jefferson County Public Schools. I volunteered at Butler School the whole time that my son was there, and the other schools that he was at. For 4 years at Butler, I was the team photographer for the football team, and I am currently the team photographer volunteer, and also was the treasurer for the Butler High School's junior ROTC program, which just started last year. And that's my introduction for now. I won't keep going. I want the
other. And also, do you have any where people can get more information, a website, Facebook, a Twitter, anything like that?
My Facebook page is ewbull20@yahoo.com.
Thank you so much. And that was perfect amount of time, about 2 minutes. And again, if you want to throw out any place where people can get more information, please feel free to do this so at this time. And you're up.
Hi, I'm Chuck Hadaway, and I was a candidate in Metro Council District 12 when we had our first merger election. I am a parent first and foremost, and that's why I'm interested in the school board race. I started to get involved with JCPS before I had the privilege of being a parent. I spent 4 years at Family Resource Center Council at Okolona Elementary, and I have served, I'm in my fourth year serving in the SBDM Council at Carter Traditional. I wanted to be involved before I had children, and that's what I did. My children now are in fourth grade at Carter Traditional. I got the package deal, a boy and a girl, twins. And I currently serve on a couple state boards that the governor has appointed me to. And I also serve for 6 years. I've served on the Kentucky League of Cities. It's a statewide group of all of the Commonwealth's mayors to work on the issues with them. And I also serve on the National Recreation and Park Administration Program Committee, which is the educational component for their conference every year. So very interested in seeing student achievement rise and graduation rates increase. That is my main focus.
Anywhere where people can get more information?
Absolutely. Twitter is Hadaway, Haddaway, 4EDUC. And I have a Facebook launched yesterday, and it is facebook.com, Chuck Hadaway for School Board.
Thank you so much, Mr. White.
Hi, my name is Lloyd White. I am a product of Jefferson County School Systems in District 4. I went to Johnsontown, Frost, and Valley. My wife went to Medora, Frost, and Butler. I currently have 5 children at home. 3 are biological, 2 are adopted. I'm a foster adoptive parent, but I have currently closed my home because of the 2 adoptions that we have. And all my kids, including my foster kids, are JCPS students. I have one daughter that has already graduated, got her nursing degree, married, gave me my first grandchild. Awesome, I must say. And my second daughter is currently going to a JCC. I have one son at Southern, one son at Manual and a daughter in elementary school. We're going to try to get her in Dixie next year because that's where all her siblings went, so they'll know her and know the family and know the routine. I have wanted to run for school board for a long time. I like Joe Hardesty. I know of him and about him. I don't know him personally, but, you know, when you have a good guy doing the job, there's no point in running against him. So, but now that Joe Hardesty has graciously retired, as I said, I've wanted to run before. Some of the issues that I see in District 4, we're a very working-class district. I think that anybody that rides around District 4 can ride the neighborhoods and the trailer parks and, you know, the subdivisions, and they can see kids running the streets, basically raising themselves. And I think that as my one of my opponents mentioned earlier, I think we need to get these kids not only ready for college, but some of these kids may not make it to college, and we need to give them the life skills and the soft skills that the business community needs to get them employed and to help them make it with their families. So I think there are a lot of opportunities at the school board that may be outside the box, and I would like to bring those opportunities. I'm also a member of the Planning Commission, recently appointed by Mayor Fisher about 8 months ago, and I thought I knew economic development, but then when you get on the board and you roll up your sleeves and you serve, you get a whole new education. And I'm sure the school board is no different. You know, when you get in there and you start rolling up your sleeves and working, you'll get to see things, you know, in the statistics and stuff, and you'll get an education as well. So I'm looking forward to serving. I hope my district votes me in, and I'm very excited as a parent to do what I can. It's always been about kids with me.
And do you have anywhere where people can get more information?
No, but talking to my other gentleman, I may get a Twitter. I've never Twittered, and I get on Facebook about once every 3 months. So I'll talk to some people in my cabinet and get a Facebook page going.
Sounds good. These are the three candidates who have showed for District 4. There are more candidates for District 4. Chester Flake did not RSVP, and Melissa Missy Smith was unable to make it tonight. And I don't know if you've heard, but Steve Ryan has withdrawn from District 4. So these three candidates, thank you so much for coming out, and let's just get right down to it. This is how it'll work. I'll essentially just ask a question, and I'll try to be fair with who, you know, goes first. I have a list here. I'll just make a mark on who I've asked the question to first. And then everybody will get an equal chance to respond. If somebody's mentioned by name, I'll give that person, the other candidate, a chance to have a dialogue about whatever is the issue. So my first question is, some of you have told me that you've wanted to kind of contact and talk with constituents and the parents and people in your district before deciding some key issues. So how many of you have met with constituents or parents? What have you done to find the voice of your district, and what does that voice look like? And we'll start with Mr. Hathaway.
Well, I've been out to the soccer fields and in the neighborhoods, and as Mr. White said, we do have a working class district, and the concern is that they get a good education, not necessarily that they're college ready, but they are career ready. And I will be at the Southwest Community Festival that's coming up on October 13th. I will also be at several invited places in the district. And I think the main thing is people are very concerned. There's a lot of discussion about neighborhood schools and the decision that has happened with that. But mostly people are concerned that they get they're not overlooked, that the pockets of brilliance in our JCPS system are not found in the East or somewhere else, that they're also found in the Southwest as well.
Thank you so much. Mr. White?
Repeat the question, please.
Sure. What have you done in your district to find the voice of the people that you're going to be representing should you win the seat?
I've been out talking with constituents. I've also been talking with business people. The way this race has heated up, I've had to do a lot of studying, a lot of staying up, and a lot of checking on issues. One thing that I'm finding as I talk to people in Valley Station, they're not shy. They will tell you exactly what they think. And I've literally gone to houses and functions and gotten one opinion, then gone to another house and another function and got a completely opposite opinion. So I think the opinions out there vary, and anybody from Valley Station understands that. One of the things that is consistent, though, is career-ready children that can read, you know, and write when they get out of school. Achievement is an issue. And basically, you know, having kids that come through the system, and one of the things that our state is focusing on now, I was at a labor management conference, and I'm a tradesman, I'm a carpenter. Not everyone has to go to college to have a good career. You can get into a trade. Our business people in our community need young men and young women to do the service and do the manufacturing, and we need to prepare kids not only for college, but we also need to prepare kids for life. And soft skills include things like showing up on time, planning your life around, you know, your spare time, not work, and several other things we'll probably get into in the debate later.
Thank you so much, Mr. Bullock.
Well, I've also, at the football games, obviously, I'm there taking the photographs, but I'm talking to the parents there. And I've been going to the small businesses there in Valley Station, talking to parents. And some of the issues that are coming up there are buses being overcrowded. And also the business leaders are talking. We need to, not only the work to study program is a good thing that we have with the it's partnered up with the city of Louisville and with UPS. And I think UHANA is the other one. But we should also look at bringing back the co-ops where we have some the HVAC, carpentry, we have small business or small engine repair, automotive, the shops. Bring those back, and the students that don't want to go to college to get that 4-year degree, see if we can't partner up with the businesses that will bring in apprenticeships back to where they can go into automotive repair or heating and air conditioning. I've had parents and businesses talk about that and see if we can't marry up with the businesses, the small businesses in our community and the local governments that can make that happen and branch out to GE and some of the other larger corporations that are growing in our community. Since we voted in and to merge the city into the 16th largest city in the United States, we've got to reach outside of the box of being Jefferson County Public Schools, but look at it as we're one large city, and tap into that and on that resource that we haven't looked into, and get our parents back into the schools and get them and with volunteering again in the schools. And one way we can do that is the neighborhood schools, and we can keep the diversity in schools and bring the neighborhood schools back, but still keep diversity in there. And I'll explain that a little bit later on in the debate.
Thank you so much. Just a quick show of hands from our candidates up here. How many of you have talked to students, not your own, so far? All right. Just wanted to check. We hear a lot about student achievement. Sometimes that gets lost in what we define as student achievement. It's an easy term to agree with, but my question is, what does student achievement look like to you? And with the changes that have been happening statewide and also in Jefferson County, are we on track to see a turnaround with student achievement? And we'll start over here with Mr. White.
Well, one thing that I want to say, as difficult as things have been with test scores and the negativity that are out there, I commend Donna, the new superintendent, for telling people that we're going to be switching to a new testing that's going to be more universal and that scores are going to drop when student achievement is such a priority. Student achievement to me looks like someone that comes out of high school and they're prepared for life. At a career fair, we went in and talked to students, and we asked them, you know, how many of you want to go into a 4-year apprenticeship program and work in construction? Nobody raised their hands. We thought, okay, we'll switch it up. So the next class, we said, okay, how would you like to go to a 4-year institution where when you get out, you're going to have an accredited applied associate's degree? We're going to start you off at about $14 an hour, and every 6 months you're going to get a raise. And you're going to have full benefits from day one, pension, annuity coverage, and you don't have to know anything about the job. We will teach you and employ you as you go. And then when you get out, you're going to have a job making between $35,000 and $50,000 a year. Just about every kid in that class raised their hand. I think that we need to work with our business communities and try to produce success by kids that are ready to go out into the workforce, whether they go to college or whether they go to a service industry and work their way up into management. That's what success looks like to me. Children that come out of school and they're ready to provide for themselves and for their families.
Thank you. Mr. Bullock, is that I've heard actually everyone up here talk a lot about the career part of the college and career ready standards. Is that a good focus? Is that something that you feel is strong in the new state assessments? And what does student achievement look like to you?
Well, the student achievement, there's one shortcoming I can see being a parent of a student athlete is we're not challenging our student athletes enough. The standards for the student athletes are pretty low when it comes to their grades, their grade point average, and I'd like to see that raised a little bit because that's not getting them ready for college on the college level. And what we expect of them is to get a minimal passing grade and allow them to keep playing. Now, I'm not saying we punish the student athletes. I'm saying that we reach out, help them study, and keep their grades up. And during the season that they're playing football, basketball, volleyball, softball, baseball, whichever sport they're playing. And instead of and telling them that if they're a star athlete, that we'll keep their grades at the minimum and let them play while they're at the minimum level. But let's get them a tutor. And I think that we should tap into the higher level students that are at the 4.0 grade level and let them tutor, get a tutoring program with the students, because I hear students talk about that they can relate to each other on their level a lot more so than they can than a teacher trying to help them understand sometimes the problems of the math and the history than a teacher, because sometimes the class is not, some of the students are saying that it's not challenging enough for them or it's too easy. And then other students are saying, well, it's too hard, they're moving too fast, I don't understand. And the teachers are trying to balance between the what's going on in the classroom of some students are moving at too slow of a pace and some are moving at too fast of a pace. We need to lower the size of the classroom, and then we need to challenge the students a little bit harder, and I think that would help get them, prepare them for what's going on in the real life and in business, and not
10 seconds,
not coddle them and just say after the season we'll work on your grades to get your grades up ready for college.
Thank you. Mr. Hadaway.
I love student achievement. That is what it is about. That is the goal of our educating our children. A student's zip code should not outline their path of possibility. They should be able to have to excel in any school across JCPS. So every school needs to raise their level. We have in District 4, we have some with a 40% or 50% graduation rate. To me, that is unacceptable. We want our children to graduate and be college and career ready. And part of that, and what we've got coming, is a waking up moment. Because of the standards have changed, we're going to start to see that the first year out, when the reports come in, that we're going to have lower standards by score-wise because the scoring system has changed. But now we're going to a common core standard that I think is going to help us evaluate all the way across the board, will help us to evaluate how we're going to be in other countries as well. And that is a key development. So the one part of the question is, are we moving in the right direction? I think we are with the common core standards. We need to make sure that in the instruction in the classroom is centered around students' needs. So student achievement for Johnny in fifth grade is different for Allison in third grade. So we have to challenge our teachers to be responsive to the students' needs, be very close to their ear and help them. And the Common Core standards will help do that. So student achievement is different for different people. But one thing for sure, the graduation rate has to increase.
Thank you. I'd like to talk about neighborhood schools, the neighborhood schools issue. It's a huge issue this year in most of the races. Nearly half the candidates who filed for running for a school board are running on a campaign in one way or another for neighborhood schools. And we'll start with Mr. Bullock. What's your argument? You are for neighborhood schools, correct?
Yes.
What's your argument for neighborhood schools? And I guess also, if you can, respond to the recent decision by the State Supreme Court, which ruled in favor of JCPS, which to many, it puts the issue to rest. Obviously, for many others, it doesn't. What's your argument for neighborhood schools?
Well, when it comes to neighborhood schools, I think you automatically think that we're going to take away from diversity. We can still achieve diversity when you want to enroll your child in the school closest to your house. But then if you choose to send your child to a school further away from your house, then we can still provide transportation to the school of your choice. But I still feel that the parent should have the choice to send their school to the neighborhood school closest to them. The reason I feel that way is the parents need to be more involved in the schools. Now, if you have a parent that can be more involved with the education of their child, it's going to help bring the test scores up. And I firmly believe that. Me and my wife stayed very involved with our son's education all through grade school, middle school, and then high school, and that's why I believe that he got 4.0, graduated with honors in the Beta Club, and he's now a freshman in at U of L, and he's taken and he took dual credit classes in high school and made excellent grades in those classes too. And when it comes to the teachers, instead of leaving the teachers in the when we have the most experienced teachers staying in one school all the time, we need to possibly take a look at moving the teachers around, the most experienced teachers around in the less performing schools, and try to raising the grades and raising the test scores in those schools. Now, when we look at the standardized testing, I think that we need to look at how we do those standardized testing. And if you talk to some of these students and you ask them questions that aren't on those standardized testings, a lot of them really don't know some of the simple questions that are just general questions about history or general questions about who's on the Supreme Court or who the president is.
10 seconds.
That are just recently the president, if you hear, just watch a few news channels. Is that time up?
That's a little concerning
to me. So we need to not focus on just give me a couple seconds. Sure. Not focus on the testing performance, but focus again on what we can help the teachers with to in their classrooms.
Mr. Hathaway.
Well, this one really tugs at the heartstrings for a lot of people when I talk to them. There's no doubt about it. And I have fond memories of walking to my public school in Baltimore, Maryland. And just the community of walking with the fellow students there. However, I think the student assignment plan still needs a little traction. I still think it needs a little time before it'll work. What I'm concerned about is the people that argue for neighborhood schools based on it building community more than anything else. We're building community in picnics. We're building communities in our faith-based institutions. We're building them at the little league fields and everything like that. We've got to remember that neighborhood schools, although I never want to give an opportunity to say you can't send your child to a certain school, I respect the right of a parent to choose their schools. I want to see this student assignment plan, see what it does right now. There's still a lot of time for it to see if it'll work out. And I want to make sure that the focus, once again, is in the classroom. If we were to overhaul and just go to a neighborhood school system right now, it would flood schools. What's interesting to me is over 80% of parents do pick one of their first or two choices. They get one of their first two choices when they pick out of their cluster. And what's also interesting is about 50% don't even pick the school closest to their proximity. Let's get to the heart of the issue. The heart of the issue is each parent wants to have the best education for their child. So that doesn't necessarily mean it's the one that's the closest. But let's fix the problem by excelling all the schools and expecting more from them.
Just to follow up, do you support the recent decision by the board to adopt the changes to the student assignment plan? Are you comfortable with the student assignment plan as is, watching it going forward?
You're talking about what happened yesterday?
Sorry, earlier this year when the school board.
Yes, I do, and I want to see it grab some traction, and I think it is the responsibility of the school board to evaluate that like a good organization evaluates their bylaws and their policy and procedures. so many X number of years. I think it's always something that should be evaluated and always have citizen input.
So at this point, you're comfortable with the student assignment plan, watching it going forward. Mr. White.
On the topic of neighborhood schools, again, I want to reiterate that I am extremely comfortable with the smaller neighborhood clusters. I took about a 2 or 3 minute scathing from my wife because we had a foster child that came to us, and because she had not been in the district or in our cluster or gone to schools there, instead of getting in at Watson Lane or Johnsontown, she got bused to McFerrin because there was no room for her. And that was a painful year going all the way out to McFerrin from where I live in South Valley Station, you know. And so we were neighborhood schools, but they have a new cluster system. And when I had her get online and get on the website and look at the cluster schools, she's like, oh, well, that's not that bad. So I think we need to check. But one thing that I am concerned with is diversity. As a foster parent, when my oldest son came to me before I got the pleasure of adopting him, he had failed third grade once, and he was well on his way to failing third grade a second time. As we have worked with him, and he has been a part of our family, last year at Southern, he's in the machinist program, you know, the engineering program. They tested him for advanced. This year he's in advanced, and he's making A's and B's. Occasional C. But we don't let that slack. You know, first I got him to D's, then I got him to C's, then I got him to B's. Now I give him grief over C's. You know, it was the diversity, the raising of the standards, the giving him the opportunity and the resources. He's the same child. The only thing that switched was his environment. And he didn't make the kids in my home perform worse. They brought him up. And working with the church and with our Jobs for Life program, I have seen over and over again the impact children have on other children. And children can, by being together, good children can make other children reevaluate their position. And I've seen it over and over again. So
I'm wondering if this is one of those instances where you were talking about earlier, and I'm not sure if you've told everyone out there, but is this one of those instances where you're going door-to-door or just speaking with various people in District 4 that you hear both sides? I mean, is this like one of those issues where it's really divided in District 4?
It's divided, but Mr. Hathaway was alluding to earlier, the division is the kid on the bus and being across town and, you know, all that hassle. The issue's not – most kids, when they get to their elementary school, in the elementary setting, the choice of neighborhood schools makes sense to me. Because we, you know, elementary, it's not as important. I don't want to say that and sound awful, but it's – you know, in high school, my son chose Southern. So when he hops on that bus, it's a self-inflicted wound because he could have went to Valley. But he likes the program at Southern. My other son gets up early and goes to Manual. That's a self-inflicted wound. He wanted to be in Y-Pass and in their program. So I don't want to eliminate choice. It would break my sons, both their hearts, if they'd have tried to got in at either one of them high schools, and that school would have been filled up with neighborhood kids. And they'd have never had the opportunity for choice. Now, in the lower levels, it makes sense to try to keep kids closer to home. But as kids get older and the stakes get higher and they get ready for their careers and stuff, I think choice, I wouldn't want to sacrifice choice for a neighborhood school.
Thank you. Mr. Bullock, going back to you, I wonder if you can give us a sense of how much the neighborhood schools issue plays into your idea of student achievement or plays into your campaign in general, and however you might feel comfortable explaining how much it might play a role in your decision-making process or what you think about student achievement.
Well, I think when you have to keep an open mind when it comes to the education. And obviously when I'm talking about the neighborhood schools, I'm not saying just come in and just change the whole school system all at once. You probably should do it a little bit at a time and give it a time to work. Now, when I say neighborhood schools, they should have the choice of which school they want to go to. And just as these other two candidates were saying, if the older children want, the magnet schools can stay in play. And if the older students that have a career focus in mind, they want to enroll in those, just like the other ones, they have a choice. They could have a choice of to which school they wanted to go to. But if they want to go to their neighborhood school or home school first, that could be their first choice. But then they can still choose to go to another school and that would could keep the diversity, and diversity is important to me. So when I speak of neighborhood schools, I'm saying as a first choice as a parent, we should allow that to be the first choice in the decision as to where we want to send the children to go to school. But they can still choose the magnet schools or the traditional school system if that's where they choose to send their schools.
Thank you. Yeah, you have a question?
Yeah, I think one thing, it is a very emotional appeal because the phrase neighborhood schools is attacking what we think is our community, our little cove. But I agree, we have plenty of choices, and I really would like to see with the new clusters, see if this takes some traction and, you know, if it works in time. I think it's a little too early to put a judgment on it. I don't think there's many people, and I think the statistics say that people are choosing the school they want their child to go to right now. The majority of the people are.
Would you agree with the way just monitoring it? I mean, it sounds like he's Mr. Hadaway is open to the way it is right now, but monitoring it, you know, every X amount of either months, years, or whatever it takes. Is that pretty much the same thought that you have as far as moving forward with it?
I think so. I don't think that there is any other way, because if you chase the neighborhood school theory down at the core, being in construction, I know that it takes about $25 to $30 million to build a high school, you know, about $20 to $25 million to build a middle school, and right around $20 million to build an elementary or a preschool. So since we've had, you know, 20% population swings and people are moving out in the East End, you have to build, you know, tens of millions and hundreds of millions of dollars of schools to keep up. And then what do you do with the schools that are empty in the end of town nobody wants to go to? You know, I think it's not good management of our resources to be chasing population growth as much as it is to be a flowing and adaptive to whatever situation, you know, and making the best of the resources that we have.
Thank you. And you had a follow-up.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I know we're belaboring this point, but one thing I want to make sure is there are obviously some people that are being bused a long way, and I'm not insensitive to that plight at all. It is not perfect. And we need to tweak those things so we don't have that kind of situation for any of our students, because I cannot see that being conducive to any student achievement when a child is on a bus for 3 or 4 hours.
Okay. Thank you so much. I want to talk a little bit about financing during the campaign and then the role of the Jefferson County Teachers Association. They have supported you, Mr. White, in name. So far, the latest data I've seen, they haven't thrown any money in the race. But in the past, they have funded quite a bit of money, nearly $1 million the past three races put together for several candidates. But it's a lot of money being put into the race. I'm curious, and we'll start with Mr. Hadaway, if you think that the funding by the Jefferson County Teachers Association gives an unfair advantage in school board races, or if it's their right to, I mean, obviously it's their right, but if it's okay to fund candidates and if that's fair.
Absolutely. I think it gives an advantage to Mr. White. I don't know. I would like to know if any candidate has ever excelled to and got elected by the board to serve on the board that was not a JCTA candidate. That being said, it is the system, and it is their right to endorse the candidate that they like and whatever issues that follow there. The issue that comes after the election is a sticky one, and that's when in about a year we're going to look at the JCTA contract. And I don't know Mr. White and what his thoughts are on that. But it does put any candidate that is endorsed in a situation that they have to, well, it's sticky. I don't know how else to say it, but hopefully they have the professionalism to look at it individualized and not feel like they owe some favor to JCTA. We owe favor to the students and the teachers before we owe it to any kind of union that endorses us.
Would you accept money from the Jefferson County Teachers Association, upwards of $100,000?
After looking at prices of, and that's a fair question after what I just said, after looking at prices on signs and everything, I would accept anybody's money to give to my campaign. However, That kind of amount, no, I would not accept that much. For one, I think it's overkill, and I think it puts you in their more of their lap dog, depending on the amount of money.
Thank you. Mr. White, would you accept upwards of $100,000 from the Jefferson County Teachers Association?
Well, to be quite honest with you, I think it is highly illegal for me to have any communication with them. I have no clue what they're doing, why they're doing it, how they're doing it. In reference to the comment about, being beholding, I think a lot of the people that are on the school board now, their contracts are up with the teachers every so often when the contracts expire, and evidently the teachers may not be getting the bang for their buck that they're spending because they still have disagreements. They still don't get what they want, and, you know, so I'm not understanding where the money equates, and I know that there are a lot of in the business community, and I've heard of super PACs being created that are probably going to be dumping just as much money into it. I see it as no different for the teachers exercising their rights as any company or corporation or anyone else. But the only difference is that we're not working in conjunction. I'm working my own campaign by myself, and I have no clue what they have or will do for me. Until you told me they haven't given me any money or anything, I didn't know.
Yeah, and that is something I should make clear. The candidates don't accept the money themselves. That's part of their own personal campaign, the Jefferson County Teachers
Association. I in no way, shape, or form influence or control that, and all of us had the opportunity to interview for the endorsement like everywhere else in town.
Now, I'm curious, do you think that the Jefferson County Teachers Association plays an appropriate role in the school system? Do you think that they have too much power over the board?
Again, the board meetings that I've been to and some of the topics and things that I've seen debated and carried on, I don't think they always get their way. I don't. So I may be wrong, and maybe all of them are in agreement, and whatever the teachers' facts are sent over, they just do. But I don't see a puppet board. I see independent thinkers and people that care about the students and want to do what's best for them.
I don't see
why that wouldn't continue.
Thank you. Mr. Bullock, what's your opinion on the Jefferson County Teachers Association? Do you think that gives an unfair advantage? And once in office, how do you view their role with the school board and with the decisions that the board makes?
Well, I've worked both in the public sector and the private sector. So when it comes to tax dollars, you have to be very transparent. And so when it comes to the teachers union, the board, I don't think weighs their decisions based on what the teachers unions. I hear that the teachers union is strong. When it comes to the teachers unions, I think the leaders in the union may decide for the union membership, and I don't think maybe all the union members that are paying dues agree with what the union membership is wanting to do with their campaign dollars, if you will. I'd choose not to take any endorsements from anybody on either side, especially in a nonpartisan race. So you won't see me being endorsed by any special interest group at all during this race. And I didn't take any endorsements when I ran for city council, and I do that for a purpose. So I don't feel at all any favors to anybody, any special interest group. So the teachers union, and I believe that their contract comes up, if not yearly, about every 2 years to be negotiated. And that's what negotiating contracts are all about, is both sides have to be willing to negotiate in good faith, and they really should look at what's best for the education of the children and our students, and what's best for our community, and they have to keep in mind that it's the tax dollars that are funding them and that are paying their salaries, and they need to keep that focused and keep in mind. And raising taxes every year to give teachers their salaries, to give them a raise, needs to be looked at, and those are some issues that should be addressed later on.
Speaking of tax dollars, and this question will go to Mr. White, Jefferson County School Board's budget is quite large. Want to know what your thoughts are on, or what your experience is managing large budgets and working through budgets, and you can go ahead and answer past experience or current experience.
Well, before I got into construction, I used to be in retail management. I worked for a company called Kenny Shoes that is no longer in business. Used to be a Woolworth subsidiary. I had worked myself up to being what they call a market leader or district leader. I had 26 stores. My smallest store was about 230,000. My biggest store was University, which was 2 million. I understand budgets. I did it back when I was in retail. We actually had to keep a book. It was before we had computers, and I had to take people's taxes out and, you know, look at their profits and their inventory and everything and do the audits, and everything was done by paper. So that would be my biggest budget experience. My second biggest budget experience would be with my local. I am a union carpenter. We have a local of about 1,000 members. I'm the financial secretary there. I'm currently involved in selling our building on Dixie Highway and moving over to Durrett Lane, and I'm responsible for all aspects of the financials and then audited by trustees in the Department of Labor. And then my smallest budget would be my church. I'm an elder at my church, South Jefferson Christian Church, and we have a small budget of less than $300,000. We're being ambitious, and we're shooting for $280,000 in giving this year. And we've got two full-time employees, a part-time music minister, and two part-time secretaries. So we have a staff under six. So I've been in small and large budgetary issues.
Thank you. Mr. Bullock.
In the private sector, I worked for the largest independently owned armored car company, and I was the manager there and worked with a large budget and a large workforce. And then in the public sector, I worked for Metropolitan Sewer District, so I was negotiated union contracts there. So I do have experience both negotiating contracts, both with the union and then working budgets with money. And I was able to in the public sector, I was able to cut the budget without cutting jobs. I actually increased jobs, and also in transportation, I was able to cut the fuel cost and cut the accident rate, because I implemented a new policy with safe driving policy and a safe driving course, and then actually cut our accident rate with that company by over 70% in the first year, saving the company quite a bit of money, and then negotiated a new shipping contract with one of the carriers that we use, saving the company over $1 million. In the first year that I took over the negotiations with the shipping company. So with those in mind, I think I have a pretty good knowledge of how to negotiate with different both union contracts and how to deal with large budgets.
Thank you, Mr. Hathaway.
I have spent most of my career in the nonprofit world, so one thing I take from that is you have to be efficient, you have to be streamlined, and you have to be creative in getting revenue. So I think that affords me a lot of good experience. I am the chair of the Land Water Conservation Fund Advisory Board for Kentucky that was appointed to by the governor to, and that appropriates anywhere from $500,000 to $600,000 of funds to parks and recreation projects throughout the Commonwealth. So we have to monitor that and make sure that matching funds are met. So we meet with a lot of the city agencies and the nonprofit agencies that want to do big projects like spray grounds and also public parks. I've been a private business owner in the I was in the dot-com boom when that was going on, and had to create a budget there. I have worked for Metro Government. I worked for the Parks and Recreation Department and Metro Government as an athletics manager, and we had a significant piece of the pie to do services in the community. And I've also worked on a couple of church staffs where we had to be creative as well with the money bringing in. One thing that I like about the size of this board is that it's not too big. In a budget this big, has built in the checks and balances of a number of people having input on it. So I think that's a really good thing. It has been challenging because there have been some cuts in education, And it's been very difficult, I know, to probably keep the head above water and keep the resources in the classroom.
Would you have approved the recent tax increase that the board recently approved?
I don't like new taxes, but I assume that, and I haven't seen the books. I have seen the budget online, and I encourage everybody to look at the budget, read through it. But in the past 5 years, some support programs for schools have been cut 60%. Base funding for schools are 10%. Our state is struggling with the budget right now. We're growing about three-quarters the rate of as the economy from 2000 to 2010. So I'm sure the board was very efficient and very very conflicted with making that choice because you don't want to raise taxes at any point. I think you could go a little bit further in streamlining the JCPS budget and try to avoid tax hikes in the future. But I think it was mostly a response to the cut in funding from federal and state that they were doing.
Is there anywhere in the JCPS budget specifically that you would cut?
I still think there's some room for administrative cuts for sure.
And, yes. And Mr. Bullock, same question. Would you have supported the tax increase? If not, where would you find savings?
I believe I would have looked for cuts before I would have agreed to a tax increase, and I would have looked into the transportation area and administrative area. One place I wouldn't sacrifice is in the classroom. I'd look for making smaller classrooms, but I definitely wouldn't. I would look administratively to avoid any kind of tax increase.
And would those transportation cuts come from things like the GPS or the bus finder or things like that, or would it come from more fuel-efficient vehicles or just from cutting or reverting back to neighborhood schools?
Well, really, everything should be on the board, on the table, but I would look at the routes, how they drive the routes, how long they idle the buses, look at are they overlapping the routes when they're driving the buses, all different ways to cut. There's a lot of small ways when it comes to transportation that you can save cost, maintenance cost. Are they using the fleet? Is the fleet identical where they can interchange the parts? Are they using multiple different types of buses to where they have to buy a multitude of parts? It's just a whole host of ideas that could come to mind that could be a cost-saving factor. From mapping out the route to optimize the fuel efficiency of the buses and making sure that we upgrade the buses to go into all biodiesels and all alternative fuels to help cut cost, and making sure that we get a good contract rate, the best contracted rate on the fuels that we buy, and see if we can't get a good contracted rate farther out to buy the fuels at the cheapest rate as we can.
Thank you. And finally, Mr. White, same question. Would you have approved the tax increase? If not, where would you find savings?
The first thing that I would like to do is go back to my Planning Commission experience. We have literally sat at our third or fourth meeting till 11 or 12 when they've shut a place down, or 1 or 2 in the morning, hearing a case, especially a controversial case, because just like parents are concerned about their children, on the Planning Commission, people are extremely concerned about their property and their investment. And I would not want to second-guess our board unless I got to hear the same exact things that they got to hear, and I was privy to all the information that they were privy to. Because I've seen a lot of people that are armchair quarterbacks that will sit back and wait till you make a decision and not have had all the info or all the material that you've had, and then they'll want to critique the decision that you made, not privy to all the information that you were privy to. And I'd rather be more intelligent, because that's a pretty serious topic as far as, you know, streamlining the budget.
If it's fair, I'd like to just give a hypothetical. If there were cuts needed in the budget, where would you look first?
Well, if there were cuts needed, I think I would like to look at the budget. I've heard about the JCPS audit, 500 pages being online. I have not got to wade through it all yet to look at things. But obviously, transportation, you could go to meals, you could go to grounds, you could go to more energy efficient schools. You can, there are a lot of avenues without knowing what the electric bill, the gas bill, the transportation bill, you know, without being privy to all that information. I don't want to just sit here and make something up.
That's fair. This question comes from the audience, and we will go back to Mr. Bullock. Today it was reported that the New York school system gives contraceptives to school kids without parental knowledge. Is there any limit, in your view, to school systems taking over parental authority, and I guess parental authority in general, but also if you want parental authority in this way?
Yeah, I believe the parental authority supersedes what the school district in that area. I don't believe that the school district should be giving out contraceptives to any age school, being that they're minors. I believe the parents should be notified, and the schools shouldn't be giving out contraceptives to the students.
If the school-based decision-making council voted to allow that, is that a fair compromise?
No, I think parents should be the parents, and the educators should be the educators. And the parents should be notified and be able to opt out of that program. I think that the school should be teaching abstinence, if anything.
Thank you so much. Same question, Mr. Haddock.
I think parent involvement is paramount. I don't want to tell parents how to educate their children in certain areas like that. And if the SBDM did that, I agree. I think there should be an option for parents to opt out of such measures.
And what would that look like, an opt-out?
Well, I get fundraisers at home and activities at the school, and it's usually a check of, do you want to participate in this or do you not want to participate in this? And one thing I should draw out is, because I have sat on a site-based decision-making council and still do, it is always an open meeting. It is always an open door. There is always a place for parents to have input on policies or even possible policies. So I think that's where it begins.
Thank you. Same question.
I think they've said, I'm in concurrence with my opponents. I think that parents ought to be involved, especially when you're dealing with minors. Now, as far as if a parental meeting was had and a site-based decision board made a selection and I was in the audience and 100 or 200 other parents were in the audience and they had come up with something, then I would support, what the group came up with. So,
thank you. For the persistently low-achieving schools, which there are a few in Jefferson County, the restaffing model was chosen for, I believe, the first 18 schools. The transformation model was chosen for the last group. My question, and this will go to Mr. Haddaway, is the way that the restaffing model was implemented, has that worked, in your opinion? Was that the best choice for the turnaround schools out of the four choices that were provided by the government, by the federal government? And is that working in Jefferson County?
Well, I will take I'll take Mr. White's line of thinking on this issue, that I wasn't privy to all the details. However, I will say this. Students are shaped differently cognitively and academically, and as much as we can individualize instruction in a classroom of 24, we need to encourage our teachers to do that. And then also, a teacher's fit is something to be considered. Just because a teacher has been dismissed from a school, does that mean that teacher is no good? I don't know. But we should consider how they work with their peers. We should consider how the students achieve in the class. Are they learning things? Or better yet, are they learning how to problem solve? I definitely think that if you have issues where you have to move staff around, you don't give one strike and people are dismissed unless it's something egregious. But I think they should be considered on the fit of the school. You go to different schools, even in our district, and they have a different feel, a different culture in those schools. And so I don't know all the reasons for movement, but we shouldn't settle on just allowing people to be in a place in the continually low student achievement. We should definitely do something. And I would like to discuss teacher evaluations and how we handle that and what that looks like at some point.
We'll get to that next. Mr. White, same question. Is the restaffing model working with the restaffing of at least 50% of the teachers and the way Jefferson County has rolled it out is many of these teachers are just moving around the district. Some are new, but many of them are teachers that were taken out of a different school, a different persistently low-achieving school, and put into another one.
You might want to start your watch on this one because this one's going to take me a while.
Okay.
I have some extremely strong opinions on the four options that we have, and I think all four of them stink to get the Title I money. I'm not satisfied with any of them. I don't think they fit our school district. I think the fact that the stability that the children need and that the workers need in the environment to teach these children, none of these options create that stability. Now, as my case in my own district for that stability, I would like to lift up Western High School and the principal and what he did there. In a single year, after being a low-performing school, he went to all his teachers and he asked them, look, we're a low-performing school. You know what our option is. What do I have to do to get you to commit to these students? And what do you need to make things better? And then he did the hard part. He actually listened and backed his mouth up. And to my understanding, they went up 30 points in reading and in math in a single year. They were actually invited by the U.S. Secretary of Education to a symposium in Texas. I don't think you can fire your way out of a situation. I'm a builder. I don't think that you should just burn it down and chase the next newest thing. I think everything that we need to build, I see all the materials in our public school system, and I think we can make it better. But that's just my carpentry building mentality. Is it perfect? No. And do we need to polish it up and remodel it? Yes. But I think what we need is there, and I personally would like to see a different option.
Thank you. Mr. Bullock. On the question of the restaffing model, is it working in Jefferson County, and is the way they've implemented it working in Jefferson County?
Well, I haven't really seen it in action, so I really can't comment. But I really don't agree if you're going to take a large group of teachers that were underperforming, if that's what they're saying is the reason, and move them to another location and expect them to do great in another school. I think what we need to do is find out what's going on and fix the problem. Don't move the problem from one school to another school. We need to find out what they need and give them the resources to do better and help the students or the teacher or both get better at scores and raise that school instead of just moving the problem from one area to the next.
And Mr. Hadaway, I guess you wanted to talk a little bit about teacher evaluations. This seems to be a nice little transition into it. What's your thought on teacher evaluations? In the past panel, we've heard people talk about incentives for teachers. I mean, you know, give them an extra bonus for bettering a teacher's score, you know, or bettering student scores, you know, 50%. But what's an appropriate response to the issue of the way, you know, the salary schedule that JCPS currently has for teachers and teacher evaluations moving forward, if that's even something that you support?
Well, I'd like to direct the discussion to what is teacher evaluation. There's a lot of push, and I guess because it's an easier route to take that it's based on student scores, and I think it needs to be a little more multifaceted and toward growth. I would not want to pull my dentist's license because he has a poor percentage of his patients having too many cavities. I think it's part of the issue of teacher evaluation, but I think it needs to be wrapped up in a big form that addresses the whole classroom. I think we should look at what their professional development pursuit is. Are they trying to make themselves better? Are they professionally developing themselves as well? Are they collaborative in their peer partnerships? I know I've seen in my child's school that a teacher that may be a little weaker in science will pair with another teacher of the same grade who is stronger in science and vice versa on math, and they work together to make it a better classroom for the students. I want to make sure that our teachers are communicating with our parents if I'm going to evaluate them highly. They have to talk to the stakeholders. I mean, parents have to be involved, and they need to know what is going on in the classroom. And then I also want to know, are they disciplined in their planning? Are they following through with what they said? I've had, as many parents have had, experiences with good teachers and bad teachers. They say they're going to do one thing, and then they don't. And then you sit there at the parent-teacher conference, and you wonder what's going on. Wait a minute, you were going to lead in this direction. So now a big key component in teacher evaluation is to train our administrators how to evaluate look at the big picture and to be responsive to the needs that they're mentioning in their classroom. If we have someone that is very career oriented and fast tracked their way through the classroom and went straight to administrative part, I don't want to fault them for making that fast track, but they probably need a little more time or at least training about what the classroom situation is.
10 seconds.
So teacher evaluations can be more appropriate. It's a bigger picture than just student assessment and achievement.
Sounds like you have a little. You're starting a nice little metric for teacher evaluation right there. What percentage? What weight would you give student test scores?
Well, interestingly enough, I ran across a study about that. Education Week was talking about this at the teacher town hall that's happened recently. This is ongoing, and in less than 1/3 of teachers think it should be 72%. Less than 1/3. I think it's part of the component. And what's difficult, Devin, is with a Common Core standard, we're moving from an assessment by standardized tests kind of way of measuring achievement to we're moving to a way of problem solving, creative thinking. So your standardized test, I feel, in the education of the future is going to be something. We're not going to see the blue books and the little forms that fill out the circles as much, and multiple choice tests. We're going to have assessments on different levels. It'll look differently.
Thank you so much. Mr. White, what's your thought on student test scores being a large part of teacher evaluations and then giving teachers extra bonuses or giving them extra incentives to do better work?
I think I put my answers in the Courier-Journal very well. As a foster adoptive parent, there are so many issues beyond the teacher's control. Now, if we did not have issues with attendance, you know, 40% of the people at Valley High School missed a week or more, I don't care how good a teacher you are, you can't teach a kid that's not there. You know, so if there were no other outside factors and it was strictly on what the teacher did in the classroom, then I would say make it a very fundamental part of the evaluation. Now, I do think that everyone needs evaluation and needs constructive criticism, but I think the teachers ought to be evaluated in a way. I have a friend that's a teacher, and they have major things that they're evaluated on, which will get their job, and then they have self-improvement things, minor things that they're evaluated on that they can actually ask for help on. I think if we have a teacher that's struggling in science, as the one gentleman mentioned earlier, and needs to hook up with a mentor, we need to have a safe environment, but then we need to keep track of that. And after so many minor things, if this person is still year after year not getting it, then maybe we don't need to have them teaching science anymore. Maybe we need to have them teaching another, you know. But I think it should be a part of the evaluation process, but I don't think it should be so significant that it affects their livelihood and their career, you know, right out the gate without giving them a chance.
Thank you. And Mr. Bullock, same question on teacher evaluations and the weight of student performance on those evaluations. And is there a better method or a better system out there to reward teachers, or what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't say that I have the answers to all those questions, but I would say with doing evaluations from employees before, if they're doing their job that they chose to do, if I had to pick a number, I would say 50% of that would be based on the standardized test. I would look at, are they doing continuing education? Because we've got technologies coming up now that teachers can reach out and use to help teach. Are they furthering their education?
The
teachers themselves. Or are they looking at more better ways to reach the students that are having a harder time? Are they doing more than just their job? Are they relying on tenure to get that raise because of the contract? There's a whole lot of areas that need to be looked at rather than just the student achievement or the standardized testing as to what the teacher's evaluation. And we do need to work with the administrators and help them how to recognize the teachers that are going above and beyond and show them and make sure that the administrators are keeping up with the technology and so we can evaluate the teachers in a fair and balanced way to ensure that we have the best teachers in our school system.
Thank you so much. That a follow-up.
One other thing. Any evaluation, and I'm sure my colleagues at the table can say this as well because they've evaluated employees before. Any form that the evaluation takes, we need to move away from a punitive outlook at it and look at it as a growth building. You know, the teaching profession, there's few more nobler professions to guide your life in. So most people that are passionate in that want edification. They want to have their weaknesses shown, but they want an instruction on how to go forward. So too often when we evaluate employees in whatever business we're in, it is a punitive thing, and we talk about what they've done wrong. We should talk about what they do right and hook them up with other colleagues that have done things right as well.
Is that something that you feel strongly?
Yeah, one thing that amazed me at labor management with GLI and a lot of other people is a lot of people don't know that in 2009 there was a test done of 17 urban school districts, and they were big districts. And of these 17 urban school districts that were tested, they were tested. I always have to look the name up to make sure I get it. It's the NAEP. And at Louisville, Kentucky, Jefferson County placed third in a science test for over 167,000 fourth graders and eighth graders. Jefferson County, Louisville, Kentucky schools. It was us and Austin. But here's some of the cities we beat in Charlotte, North Carolina. We beat Atlanta, Boston, Chicago, Cleveland, Detroit, Philadelphia, San Diego, New York, Milwaukee. We have done very well. This is a 2011 release in Applied Sciences, and some of that I think is from the chase of the standardized testing. I think we're sacrificing social studies, we're sacrificing history, we're sacrificing arts, we're sacrificing science.
10 seconds.
We're sacrificing important things to chase after Title I money and to get scores up, and I think we need more well-rounded children. And there's a reason why that test score, I feel like, is that way, and I'll get into that later since I'm out of time.
Well, that's actually all the time we have.
Sorry.
I would like to give the candidates a chance to give closing statements. You have about a minute and a half. Anything you would like people to know that we didn't cover or anything about yourself personally, and we'll start at the end with Mr. Bullock.
Well, again, I chose to run because I feel like that I can add some new ideas to the school board. And even if I don't get elected, I'd like to work with the new person that is elected in and give them my ideas that they have and work with the new school board, all of them, the ones that are still in office and that may get elected in. And I appreciate WFPL Radio for hosting this event, and I'd like to thank the audience for coming in and asking the questions. Thank you very much.
Mr. Hathaway.
Well, I have benefited from public education, and my children are benefiting from public education, and I'm excited about the future. I tend to be an optimist more than I am a pessimist, and like to see the good side of things. And I think some of the standards that are changing are going to teach our kids to be more creative thinkers, problem solvers, and they're going to communicate with others more so. They won't be just regurgitating facts and figures that they temporarily learned, and I'd like to see it move forward in that direction. When we test people, we usually check their knowledge on something, but now in the future of education, we're going to be checking not only their knowledge but their skills to problem solve, and I think that'll help in the future. I think it is crucial. This is a crucial time. We are having quite a change in the school board, whoever is elected, and I agree. If elected or not elected, I hope to still have a voice and plan on having a voice and being involved, if not on the school board level, but at least in my local school level. And I think that's the most encouraging thing about this race, that so many candidates signed up for it. It speaks well of our community that we care about our kids and we care about our future and we care about our economic development here. So thank you, WFPL, for hosting this.
Thank you, and Mr. White.
In case I forget, I want to thank WFPL for hosting this. In my parting comments, one of the things that will be fundamental to me would be some of the things like that a science assessment score. I know that several years back, GE gave a $25 million grant to JCPS for a Brains for Bucks program to remodel some of my friends that work construction remodeled all the labs and all the science. That may have something to do with the test score. It may not. But I think we have resources in UPS. I think we have resources with Ford Retooling. I think we have resources at Riverport that if we reached out to the business community, we can give kids in our district paths to success. And that's the main thing that I would like to accomplish on the school board, is to prepare kids for life and soft skill things, shaking a hand, building a resume, looking at your life journey and counting the cost and seeing how you're going to get from here to there. I'd like to thank my opponents for stepping up and volunteering and being here at the debate. It was a pleasure to meet you, gentlemen, and hear how you stood on the issues. And whether I'm elected or not, it's always been about kids with me. So I will still be involved in the school systems, and I hope, you know, if I can be of service, you guys just call on me.
Well, again, thank you so much to the candidates, to the people that came out. Obviously, we wish that there were 2,000 people here. We hope what
I
you
don't.
Do is you take what you heard here and either write about it, talk about it in the community. I think that's what we've been trying to do in the media, is really just give you guys a voice as much as possible to say what you need to say, so that people in the community know where you're coming from so that they can make the best decision in November. And again, we just hope that you guys take what you have here. And again, these are just three of the candidates. Melissa Missy Smith was unable to come. Chester Flake was unable to come as well. So there are two other candidates. And WFPL, and I'm sure most media outlets will do their best to get that information about what their viewpoints are to the public as much as possible. So check back with WFPL.org for future conversations or future dialogue, and for those candidates' responses to some of the questions we'll be asking them. And thank you so much for coming out.